Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
On today's episode, I'm excited to say we have Mr. Aaron Jew. He's an ex-social worker, a fitness expert, and a property investor who has an incredible portfolio. He's raised over £1 million in joint venture finance, but his real purpose in life is to help people write their own story, but most importantly, find their own voice. Aaron is also known for his successful podcast, Find Your Own Voice. So Aaron, the greatest accomplishment is overcoming anxiety and finding his own voice through his podcast. So Aaron, over to you.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Thank you for the nice welcome. I need you on my show every day. I'm going to start it like that.
No, please. Yeah. So Aaron, where did it all start for yourself? Tell us a little bit more about where it all started for you and the anxiety for yourself. For anyone that doesn't know, Find Your Voice, the podcast, I mean, that's helped me massively. Listening to that and the anxiety that you've been through, I, for one, can certainly resonate with that. Tell me a little bit more about that for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, obviously, for listening. I truly appreciate that. So I think growing up as a kid, you know, I had a great upbringing. There's nothing to complain about. I think if I look back in hindsight, the only thing we lacked was money, but I was so happy that I don't even know if money would have ever changed anything there, which is why my thoughts on money now is, yes, having more can obviously, you know, make your life a lot easier, but I don't ever chase it. It's not something that I get excited about or I need to sell my soul for, if that makes sense. But I was very smart in terms of academics as a child. So I could look at something and I could remember it. Almost like, I don't know if you ever watched Prison Break, but like a Michael Scofield brain. So I kind of had that as a kid, that like I would do my homework like 10 minutes before and my parents would be on my case, but I'd be like, I've got this, and I'd look at it and I'd remember it and I'd be ready for class. But then as a result of that, they pushed me to go to grammar school, and I never wanted to go to grammar school. So I obviously, you know, growing up, I was all into girls and stuff like that. I didn't want to go to a boys' school, but going to a boys' school where I've gone from now being the smartest kid at school to I was like 90 out of 96, which is still brilliant across the UK, but you're sitting with like the top of the cream of the crop. I started struggling and I realized I'm that kind of person who needs an arm around the shoulder rather than a kick up the ass in terms of my own motivation. So I really started to go from being the popular kid at school to the one that's not really recognized as much. And as a result of that, anxiety started kicking in. When around 14 and 15, when you're going out and you're in town after school and stuff and you're seeing girls, I've got no idea now how to speak to girls because I haven't spoken to them for the best part of 5 years. And then that started making me insecure. And then I started developing shyness. And I used to walk with like a hunchback. So I used to always look at the ground. And when I met some of these people later on in life through like MSN chats and generally speaking to them or at university, they used to say, you used to come across as a very arrogant person in terms of we try and look at, talk to you and you just have your head down. I was like, that was not like something I was trying to do. It was me really struggling. And I'd find myself often never making eye contact with people. So somebody would look at me and I'd look at the floor and then smile at the floor thinking, shit, like I must look so rude, if that makes sense. And it was really like these weird things. And it was like, there's a recent phenomenon I read about, the spotlight effect. And I genuinely felt I was living my life with the spotlight effect, which is basically me over-exaggerating how much the world is looking at me as an individual, like as if I'm that important.
I think there's so many people that do that as well. That's 100% agree with you there, 100%. And also, I think there's another thing that you've sort of touched on there. Not a lot of people know about your story, but about your project management skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you enlighten us about that? Because you went to a grammar school, as you touched on, but I think you downplay how intelligent you actually are with your project management skills as well.
Well, actually, it's funny that you said how intelligent I am, because how I ended up in project management wasn't that intelligent. So cut a long story short is, we were applying for university and I was going to take a year out because I didn't get the grades I wanted. In my final year, I was like seeing someone. I was missing school because I was 18. I was able to kind of sign my own release and stuff. And the ability to remember stuff was slowly fading away. Like I was getting slightly worse as I was growing older.
Is that because of alcohol and?
Well, I just started drinking then, so probably it's probably the alcohol kicking in there. But I was sitting with my best friend. He'd come around. He'd got accepted into Aston University, and he was like, "Why don't you just try clearing?" So I was like, "Okay, let's get up the list." And on the list it said construction economics. Now I like economics. I loved it. It was probably one of the only lessons at school, along with PE, that I actually enjoyed. So I was like, yeah, brilliant, let's do construction economics. Anyway, they found out I was from a grammar school. I got accepted straight away. Started this course and I was like, this has nothing to do with economics. This is all construction, right? So about 3 months into this first semester, they changed the name to construction project management. So I'm sitting here in this random lecture learning about construction, which I've got no prior experience or any interest in, thinking, what am I doing? But at the same time, my best friends till this day, we're all on my course as well. So there's a good 7 of us. We all, fortunately, were on the same course. So I was like, well, I'm not going to leave my friends. I'm having a good time at uni. And I kind of just stuck it out. So it was a 5-year degree. I did a 2-year work experience in the middle of that, which was a sandwich degree for Mott MacDonald's, like a big engineering firm in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And we were on some amazing projects. I see him as one of my mentors in life, Adrian Bates. He was a senior project manager at the time. He took me under his wing. So he could always sense that I was quite an anxious, shy person, especially in the office space. I would never take phone calls in front of people. I would always take my own mobile phone. And back then you had to pay for your credit. It was quite expensive. So I used to have to walk to where the elevators were, or sometimes I'd walk into a guy's cubicle and take the phone call that my manager had asked me to take, because I'd be too nervous to say something in front of them in case I made a mistake. But at the same time, I used to learn so much watching him as a project manager working with the Highways Agency on like a £400 million project. And he was so brilliant at understanding what the client wanted and then delivering in that within the time scale and within the budget. But also, one of the greatest lessons I learned is he would almost make that person feel like they made the decision, even though it was what he wanted to do from the onset. And I learned a lot of stuff about communicating with different types of people from him and learning how to listen and then extracting that. And I think that subsequently has helped me now in my project management experience, in terms of obviously managing trades and then getting my projects up and going, basically, because now I don't really see myself as somebody who's hands-on. I almost see myself as a facilitator. I can get on with people very easily. It's why people invest a lot of money with me. I can almost just put the jigsaws together. It's like, you give me everything and I'll tell you where you go, and then we kind of paint this beautiful picture.
It's fantastic. And I think it's important to recognize as well, I for one, obviously listening into your story, following you on social media, on your social media platforms, and your obviously your podcast, I've noticed that you still suffer with anxiety and your mental health. And I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I do. And I think if more people reached out, they're going to be honest with themselves, they would as well. It's the whole point of this podcast, the whole point of you want to get people to find their voice and write their own story. How do you cope with your situation now, with, because you've got Health Excel, obviously you've got your property, there's so many things that you've got to cope with. How do you cope with all of that, with that now?
Sometimes I'd say not too well, sometimes I say I do okay, and that's the truth of it. So it's more about a kind of like a self-assessment of yourself and understanding how you are. I'm a very extreme person in terms of I will happily take on 20 hours of work for three weeks of the month. And I enjoy that. I thrive under that kind of environment. But then I also burn out very, very quickly, which I know for mental health and just general well-being and sustainability isn't great. But it's how I operate. So when I'm on it, I am on it. But I also have days where I don't want to speak to anyone. And I find that's been one of the hardest things, because I don't like to upset no one. I don't want to come across as like a rude person or anything like that. But what I'm trying to do more is say no to certain things. So before I was a complete yes man. And being a yes man, what you realize, especially in property, is people will reach out to me every day like, hi, can I have 5 minutes of your time? And I'd always say yes. You go back 9 years on my social media, I've never ever said no to anyone. And I say yes. That's not 5 minutes. That's like half an hour, 45 minutes. And I'm doing that back to back every single day. I'm not getting none of my own work done. If you ever reach out back to those people, it's on their time. And this isn't a criticism to anyone else. It's what you have to recognize is you have to work on your own kind of your own frequency and your own energy when you're able to give. Because what I was doing was I was giving and not having nothing left for
myself.
Yeah, you're
not stealing anything back. And that becomes detrimental to your own health and health from your relationships and obviously your wife as well.
Massively. And my wife and my mum were the first ones to point this out, that you need to learn to say no, which for me, as I'd say, I probably was a people pleaser. I didn't want to say no to no one. I didn't want to come across as my time is, you know, worth more than your time. I want to try and help people. It's why I do what I do. So I've literally done little things like I block out a Friday where I have calls just before this call. If anyone wants to speak about property, I'll try and help them. And it's just 2 hours of me kind of giving back without sabotaging the rest of my week.
Yeah.
But general practices I do in the day, I will journal if my head is really clouded and I get no clarity or I'm just feeling stressed and overwhelmed. And what you'll often find is when you write stuff down, it might just be a really simple thing. Like, I don't know, I haven't paid for the last invoice, for example, or I read a nasty comment on social media. It could be anything. Just write whatever's in your head. And as you start writing it, it goes from here onto a piece of paper, which is a lot less easier to manage because you can close that piece of paper and walk away. I exercise every single day if I can. I'll either do like a home workout. I managed to persuade the wife to let me have a bench in the kitchen dining area, which was harder than I thought. We got it done. Or I go for runs. I never used to like running, but I find running, I suffered with a loss at the back end of last year, and it was kind of my release in terms of running. I felt it was my time alone and having conversations and stuff. It might sound a little bit crazy, but it really helped me. And again, it's whatever works for you, your medicine. And then
that doesn't sound crazy at all. I'm sure anyone that listens, whatever works for you, I think that's really important to get things done, have a to-do list. As long as it's not overwhelming, that's one thing I would say. That's something that I've definitely suffered with, is creating a massive to-do list and then you've created yourself another problem.
Yeah.
Because it can become overwhelming, because if you don't then get it done, then you're stressing that you haven't got it done. I don't know if you'd agree with that. How do you feel?
I 100% agree with that. And that was one of my issues up until last year. And then I made a conscious effort that the thing that's supposed to help me is actually my worst enemy. So what I do then is I try and live by mantras through periods of my life. And the mantra I live with now is, firstly, my to-do list starts with the most important thing. So Brian Tracy's Eat That Frog. I use that principle in terms of, no matter what happens today, I have to do this one thing. Everything else is a bonus. Again, a simple reframing of the word. Rather than I have to get all these done, it's I have to do this and everything else is a bonus. Because when you get bonus stuff done, you feel good about yourself. If you don't do it, you're much kinder to yourself. And then what I say is, when I put my head down on the pillow on that night, I either have to give it my all or I'm not allowed to make excuses. That's it. And I have that dialogue with myself. So I'm constantly talking to myself like throughout the day. So at least when I go to sleep, if I haven't done anything on my to-do list, it's like, well, you're not allowed to make an excuse for it because you should have worked harder today. Let's go again tomorrow. And now what I do is every day, so I've got this pad in front of me now as I'm speaking to you, there's to-do lists on literally every page. But what I do is I just turn it straight over. I don't look at it.
Yeah.
I don't, because that will actually affect the rest of the block of your work. And then I start the next day and I think, okay, what do I now need to tackle? If it is something from the day before, absolutely put it down and then tackle that first and foremost. But we have to negotiate with our brains and kind of become our own best friends and realize how we work. And that's kind of been like the journey of finding your voice. I always kind of is finding your way through life. And I'm finding that the kinder I am to myself, the more productive I am, the happier I am, the more I can give back to other people. Whereas if I'm just beating myself up because I'm not, you know, the next Michael Jordan or the next Elon Musk, then that's not going to actually get me nowhere, because as an anxious person, that's just crippling. That's just putting me in a state of anxiety. That's not going to make me do anything.
And it leads me nicely onto your fitness. Sort of what led you into that? I kind of know, but I want to sort of kickstart off on what brought you into the fitness industry and sort of led you into losing the weight. I'll tee it up nicely for that.
So most guys want a six pack to impress the girls. I got a six pack as a consequence of just training really, really hard. So I always wanted to be a boxer. So as a young kid, I was obsessed with the Rocky films, like absolutely obsessed. The Rocky films and Karate Kid. So my dad put me in karate, but I still wanted to be a boxer. But as a young kid, I used to suffer with convulsions as a child. So my parents were always kind of hesitant to put me into anything with like full contact. So long story short, around 16, 17, I got into my first school fight and it was a mess. So I was just like the windmill tactics and I got home that day and my dad was like, did you get him? And I was like, well, I don't really think so. I kind of got myself a few times. And he was like, you need to learn how to box. So I was like, all right, brilliant. Let's learn how to box. I was quite good at sports as a child anyway. That at school, I was always good on sports days and stuff. So I went to a boxing gym, and within like 4 weeks, they were like, "You could be a very, very good national champion," considering you never picked up gloves before. So I was like, "Ah, brilliant." But this was the same time. I was also at grammar school, and going in to grammar school with a black eye was unheard of. They didn't like it. And also my parents were like, "Go and get yourself a degree because you're not going to become a boxer." So I ended up giving that up. So, but I always had a passion for it. Plus, knowing in your heart of hearts that you're naturally very good at it and you've got good praise from people, I was like, let me stick at it. Parents obviously weren't accepting of that. They were thinking it's quite a risky route, which is understandable. Yes. At 25, I graduated and I was 42 pounds heavier than I am today, as of today. Drinking, alcohol, not moving. I didn't exercise at all at uni. Just partying pretty much all the time. When I finished, at this point, my parents had been fostering children, and my mom and dad have always fostered children, adopted kids and stuff. But my mom always wanted to do a degree. So it was on her bucket list. Can I get a degree at the age that she was? So I kind of thought, okay, I've got an idea here. I'll look after the kids. You go and get your degree, right? And as long as you let me do boxing on the evening. So I kind of negotiated this thing with her, used my negotiation skills. Plus, we had just come out of the initial crash of 2008. Getting a job in construction was quite difficult. So long story short is I started looking after Kyle, Kelsey and Josh in terms of I was changing nappies. I was taking them to school, taking them to contact and doing all that stuff. But what I was doing was I was training before I take them. I was training as soon as I dropped them off, and I trained in the evening as well. I did that for about 8 weeks, like intense. I knew nothing about nutrition, nothing about anything. I lost 42 pounds in 7.5 weeks. I got to like 5% body fat within probably about 3 months. But none of it was, I wasn't trying to get aesthetically good. I was just trying to lose weight to box, because if I boxed at 80 something, I'd be boxing people like the AJs of the world, and I'd be absolutely getting smashed. Whereas if I could bring that down, maintain my power and speed, I'd have some sort of level of competing. So I got to that stage, lost the weight, and then cut a long story short, my boxing career ended as quick as it started. But I just understood the benefit of how I felt when I was training, that moment. Mentally.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, one of your biggest mentors at the time was Kevin. Yeah. And at the time as well, again, correct me if I'm wrong, was Kyle, your brother. How did he help you? How did Kev help you? How did you, I mean, that negotiation of, right, you're going to be so focused on that in order to get where you want to go from A to B. You're so set on that goal. How did you sort of know where you had to get to?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. I had three motivations at the time. So Kyle, Kev, and the other one was actually the negative people in your life who said you can't do it. So I used to live by, my mantra at that time was, I'm going to butcher the quote now, but it's a quote that goes along like, I'm doing it because you said I couldn't. I can because I want to. There's a quote like that.
No, that's perfect.
But it's effectively saying, you said I couldn't, go and watch me do it effectively. And I literally had that across my wall. But then the two main things, which I think was my intrinsic motivation, was Kyle, who is my younger brother, who suffers with autism. And at this point, we had no idea about learning difficulties or anything. And I used to spend a lot of time with him because he only used to do half a day at school. So I spent 3 hours with him trying to teach him words and colors and just speech and stuff. And what I realized in that moment was I'd wasted so much of my talent and my life by just getting by. Because I had a photographic memory, I would never try. I winged my whole life. And there's a kid here who believes he can achieve anything, and he tries every single day just to learn the simplest of things. And it kickstarted me to appreciate the gifts that I have, the ability to have this conversation. Bless Kyle for all his amazing skills, and he's got so many like beautiful skills. He can't have a conversation like this. He can't go and drive his car, or he can't go out and just go and buy property. I have the benefit of that. So that made me never try and waste a day, because I'd have a constant reminder of my younger brother every single day. And then Kev's the same. Kev's one of like my best friends till this day. We have a separate podcast, The Black Country Blokes, for men's mental health. And I never knew this. So I knew he was blind to some degree, and he was my trainer. So initially when I wanted to train, I went to try and see his dad. So Bob wasn't there, and Kev turned up. And I was thinking, I don't want to train with Kev. I want to train with Bob. But it was the best thing ever that happened, because Kev is one of the most amazing people in my life. He's like the older brother that I never had. And we just became best friends. I used to see him more than my missus, my parents at the time. I used to just train. And he taught me everything about boxing, but he taught me about taking pressure off myself. So because he suffers with mental health as well, as an anxious person, if I'm hitting the pads and I've just missed that ever so slightly, or I haven't sparred as well as I should have, I hate myself. I used to, the way I used to speak to myself was disgusting. And he'd always take that burden off me and be like, it's my job as a coach that if you're not doing it right, it's actually my responsibility. And instantly that would alleviate a lot of my stress and overwhelm. So he helped me get to where I got to. And when I found out that he had 7% vision across both eyes, I was amazed that how he never got himself knocked out, and he's trained like national champions and everything, but his resilience towards the way he sees life. Again, sometimes it doesn't always work because our pain still hurts. Our anxieties are still our anxieties, but knowing somebody else has it worse and they're not making excuses for myself, at least, makes me never make an excuse about the simple things in life.
I think it's fantastic the way you've turned that, and he's helped you. You've helped so many. You've helped hundreds and thousands of others. It's fantastic. And you've now created your podcast, which undoubtedly has helped thousands of other people. It certainly helps myself. Listening to episodes, it motivated me. It was really inspiring. I just want to touch on your property. I mean, why did you want to get into property? Just jump straight into it. What motivated you to get into property?
So the first time I actually invested was my mom saying, you're spending too much money in London, because I had a good job in London, that you need to save it. So she was effectively asking for money to be sent home, saying she was struggling. So I used to send her money home from my wages for about 18 months. And then long story short, I came home one weekend and she's like, we're going to go buy a house. I was like, where have we got the money for a house? Like, remember, we've never had money ever, any surplus of money in our house. And she was like, oh, I've been saving the money that you've been sending me. I never actually needed it. So I ended up buying a property then. Me and my mom kind of did a bit of the renovation work. We got builders and stuff in. But I didn't really enjoy it. Again, I wasn't really motivated by money. It never really struck me that this could be the path to freedom. And then, cut a long story short, 5 years ago, we were at my uncle's funeral and I was sitting with my cousin. He passed away from cancer. That's my dad's older brother. And my cousin, who's never been to university, he's never studied. He got married at like 17 or 18, like the legal age. He had a portfolio of properties in Derby, like hundreds. And back then you can get like 125% mortgages. So if you buy them at the right price, you're pretty much, you're in the money. And his mentor was like a property tycoon, like huge in Derby. So when he said property, I was like, that's really interesting. Like, surely if you can do it, not in a like arrogant way, I should have the mental capacity to be able to understand it and do it myself. So I started Googling property courses. I spent a stupid amount on courses and stuff, probably about 15 grand, literally all I had at the time. And I thought, this is my vehicle, because God forbid anything happens to my parents. He was able to retire 6 months prior to my uncle passing. I was like, I want to be able to retire 12 months prior or 18 months prior to that. So I only got into property for the concept of freedom. I just want to be able to control my life, which I do now. And I'm very grateful that I can do that now. That if my parents need me, like my mom suffers like very bad with mental health, I can just be there in like, you know, within the hour, rather than asking my boss, can I take half a day's annual leave or a paid leave and stuff. And that was actually, again, my desire to do it. My problem was when I got into the game was I believed it was like the corporate world, where you say you're going to do something, you do it. Or just like a man's handshake, that if you shake someone's hand, your word is your bond. It's nothing like that. It is a very like, it's the wild, wild west, me and one of my friends call it, because there's so many rogue people in this game. There's so many people based on perception. There's so many people who are just horrible behind closed doors. And I found that I was a very easy target. Being introverted, being shy, being quiet, happily just taking stuff on a handshake, they see me coming. And I struggled a lot when I started.
You're talking about the Stoke project.
Yeah, so that was one of them. The Stoke project, I was about 8.5 grand within like a moment. But even like 2 years ago, you know, we nearly lost like £96,000 to somebody who's still operating. And it's just like, Aaron, when are you going to learn? Like, you can't just believe what people say. It's watching their actions, and not just at the forefront, like when shit hits the fan. I feel like that's a true testament of a character, when shit hits the fan. So when that actually happened, I sold my house. Me and my wife sold our house and I moved in with the in-laws. Now, as an Asian man, moving in with your in-laws is like embarrassing. Like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be looking after my daughter. I had to do that to save face and reputation, because my reputation is everything. And I sold my house. I paid my investors back. I said, listen, I'd sleep on the street, because I'm not having anyone in like 5, 10, 15 years time say, I ever ripped you off or I never stuck to my word. But that kind of like integrity or character is it's not seen across this space. And everyone knows the right words to say. Everyone speaks about value. Everyone speaks about integrity, ethics. It's all bollocks to me. Unless I see you do anything, I apologize for swearing there. Unless I see you actually go out on your whim and actually try and do it, then absolutely, I believe it. So I just say to anyone, if you're interested in getting a property, it's the greatest thing for me. It's changed my life. I'm very grateful for it. But just be so careful. I mean, I do all these due diligence videos that get about 2 views. And I'm like, oh my God, this could save your life. Like, forget anything else I ever say. Forget my podcast. Forget all my other videos. Just watch this and just do your due diligence, because it's a predatory environment.
And I think people should be taking notice of the fact it's there for free. You've made the mistake. Learn from your mistakes. Why would you go and pay 10,000, 15,000? Yes, these people have got to earn a living. But if you've done it, why not learn from yourself? And obviously, you paid that money. You paid them people, the gurus, so to speak. We've all been there. The free webinars that upsell the £5,997 at the end of it. What are your thoughts on the gurus? I mean, I know that you're...
It's strange because I feel like, as you said, the Marmite thing, I feel like that's where I'm heading towards. So when I started this industry, I never really had anyone who would look at me and see me as somebody who's negative, or I never had anyone who's ever hated anything that I've said, because I've never been that kind of person. I'm actually a very optimistic, positive person. But the only time I ever started to get a bit of a drawback or resistance was when I started opposing people. And it was mainly from the people doing the stuff that they shouldn't be doing. So I instantly got kicked out of groups that I'd given so much, let's use the word value to, or I'd constantly be trying to help people in it, because what I was trying to do was just be realistic with people and say, like, you can do a course, that's absolutely fine. I've got nothing against people who want to sell courses or do courses, that's absolutely fine. But you need a certain level of resources before you start this game. Like, if you don't have access to money, or you don't have access to like skills, or you can't ever get the time to do it, for example, like time, resources, and education, then you're going to struggle in this game, regardless of how enthusiastic you are, or how much of The Secret you read, or you preach to the atmosphere. And the problem is, these course people know that. And most likely they go for people who are vulnerable. I'd come off losing my uncle to taking my mom and dad and my wife to this course, seeing a guy cry on stage, which was absolutely fake, by the way, the way he was crying and stuff, it was like a story, to saying, I need to do this for my parents. So I literally put my life savers into it. And in the script, it says 90-something% of our students get 10 properties by the end of the year. I'm not being by any shape arrogant here, because I'm not the smartest person, but I'm definitely one of the hardest working people out of that cohort. I was working every single day. I didn't get 10 properties. I didn't even finish my first property, which I bought just before joining that. And that wasn't through a lack of trying. I did every single thing that they said. Then what I realized is it's just a point blank lie. And that's why I say to people, like, learn the fundamentals first, get out there, connect with the right people. That 10, 15 grand, save it for you and your family, because the information is absolutely out there for free. But again, there's a psychology thing, and I've only learned this recently, is that people don't value free stuff. So then there's a part of me, like, I feel like condensing all my information and selling it. But what I'd do is find the cheapest course provider and knock 50% off, because I don't even want the money. I don't need that money to make my life any happier, if that makes sense. Because people don't value free stuff, though. And that's what's really frustrating for me at the minute.
Where do you see yourself going now? Obviously, you've done different strategies in property. You've done the social work, you've done the fitness, you're still doing the fitness, you're changing people's lives daily, you're still doing the property, you've done multiple different property strategies, you've done the buy-to-let, you're doing the HMO, service accommodation as well, still going to continue, you're going to continue growing that, aren't you?
Yeah.
So Health Excel. Health Excel.
That's it. That's the thing. That's the goal. So 18 months ago, me and my wife sat there and I thought, I can't see myself ever selling out and being one of these trainers, property trainers. I could make a lot of money, I believe, personally, if I started doing that. But at the same time, I'm happy just putting it on YouTube, because there's people out there who don't have that money to pay. So I'm just doing it for that one person there. So I said, I'll carry on doing this, although I don't enjoy it as much, like speaking about property and stuff. We're going to hopefully, if you come out of lockdown, and we're just waiting for planning on one of our sites, we should be building out 20 plus units. That's my first developments that we're ever doing. So we got planning for 2 on our site with 10 flats, and we're aimed for 23. So we've got a London architect who's doing all the work with the planning association. If that comes off in 2 years' time, I could say I've built 20 plus units, which was always a pipeline dream when I started this property game. But then my goal then is to bring my partner who I work with out of his job. So he works for, I think, KPMG. He's like a director up there. He's going to come out and he's going to take over the property front of it. Because my goal is to grow the Black Country Blocks podcast, get back on Find Your Voice podcast, because I think that, I love that. Like hearing you listen to it and your kind words, that fills me up more than anything, like more than profit or anything on a deal. But then also me and my wife's health excel, which is, she's a pharmacist. I've done a lot of fitness work. I struggle with anxiety and stuff. We've actually spent 18 months formulating two blends, which actually help with mental and physical well-being in terms of helping with cortisol levels. It's got adaptogens in there. It's organic, vegan friendly, nothing artificial. So like no sweetness and nothing. And the best thing is it's a superfood blend that you can drink without gagging straight afterwards. So like I've tried everything, like all the vitamins and everything. And most of the green powders, they taste like disgusting. We've got it out there now. It took absolutely ages to get done. And the feedback we're getting now is amazing. But our biggest goal, and this might sound really ludicrous to people, is to have this in every single household. And then I think I could die a happy man. More than anything else, we were even saying yesterday, we were on a walk. I said, I want to get to that stage where I can give this out to just underprivileged families for free. Like it doesn't affect our bottom line. At the minute, it's just it's a whole business that me and my wife built. You know, we've sold our house. We didn't choose to buy another house. We're renting at the minute. We're using that capital to grow this business because I know when people take this on a daily basis, their health is getting better every day, every single day by taking it. And that there's no better feeling than that. That for me is better than doing a video telling people how great I am because I have a huge portfolio. I couldn't really give a shit because that's not actually paying that person's bills. They might get motivated for 3 or 4 seconds, but having something tangible in their bodies is amazing. And I think as the wife, being a pharmacist, she hates prescribing medicine. She's always like, there's got to be something that you can give them beforehand, which is basically where Health Excel come from. So we've got a nice community. Again, you know, we're trying to do it organic. A couple of thousand people follow it. We get a lot of nice praise. We've got a few little sponsors on the side. We try and help people who can't afford it as and when we can as well. And that for me, especially with the mental health stuff, is the greatest thing. If we can get something in society that is going to help people. The thing for us now is we need to build it so big that we can bring the economies of scale down to bring the cost price down. Because ideally, I said to the wife, I don't want the price to be where it's at. But at the minute, it has to be where it's at. It's still more affordable than everything else on the market. I want it to be so cheap that like there's no excuse for you and your family not to have it, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely, it does. And what I want to sort of drill down to is, where does this progression come from for yourself?
I think I used to have the same mentality that you had there, that kind of let me prove you wrong. I think I'm very fortunate to be in a different mindset now that property, my initial goal with property was to get 10 properties, for example, because I believe that was the magic number to free my life up. When we did the 10 flats and we just refinanced it about a week ago, my level of happiness didn't really change because like yourself, again, I'm not sure how you live your life. I live quite a frugal life. I don't really need much. I just need my mind to be right in the day. I need my laptop working. I need to know that my mom and my brothers and sisters are fine and my wife's happy. That's it. And protein bars in the fridge. As long as there's protein bars ready, that's it. I don't really ask or need anything else. So I realized I don't need more income coming in at the minute. But through general progression, you get better. You build more out. And I know in the future, when we do these sites, there'll be a lump sum of cash there. So my progression mainly comes for Health Excel. I've set such a big goal that will hopefully keep me inspired enough to get out of bed every day. We need that in every single house in the world. So that's my big goal. But how I came to that was through value, like looking at my value system. I realized my values, I'm not necessarily driven by money. I'm more driven by the stuff my parents taught me, which is like kindness, philanthropy, things like giving back. My mom's given more to people than I've ever seen anyone else give, and she's had nothing. Like she didn't have a father growing up. She's poor. She was working 90 hours a week. Yet she's given so much. She's changed generations. She's like fostered and adopted kids. And I'm like, we're affecting the world. And that's what I want to be doing.
So that's the kind of where, very similar in a way. I mean, your mum, from what I've heard, kind of like your best friend. Yeah. I think that's very important to hear. Is your support pillar essentially? Would you go to your mum? I think it doesn't matter how old you are. If you've got that support pillar in place still to fall back on, and you look back at what your mum's done for yourself, and I suppose whether it's property, Health Excel Social Work. She's always been there for you, would you say?
100%. And I'm so grateful that my wife mimics a lot of the traits that my mom has as well. So I have the best of both worlds. So like my wife's like my best friend as well. She's supported me through all my wacky ideas. So how you mentioned, I try a lot of stuff. I get an idea and I just like, fuck it, let's just try it. And I just go out and do it. And if it wasn't for my wife having my back in that, I'd struggle. So I'm very, very grateful for like the people around me, which is why I don't need any more. Like I could be comfortable, but like you said, as humans, we need to progress. It's one of the things that keep us going. I think when you lose purpose in life, that's when things struggle. I seen my granddad work to get us over here and set us up as a family. When he came from India back in the day, he had to work so many hours to get us all on our feet. And the moment he retired, he died like 2 months later. And that's not an uncommon story. You hear people that the moment they retire, that their health deteriorates.
Absolutely.
I don't want to do that. I'm just so grateful that a lot of the stuff I get to do, like the YouTube channel, like Health Excel and stuff, is stuff I genuinely actually enjoy doing. And I'm very grateful for that.
Well, I think what you give, what a lot of people are very unsure of, is clarity. You've got the purpose and you do give clarity on the message. Leads me on to sort of the next question. Where can people find you should they need to reach out to you and get in contact with you, sir?
Thank you. So again, Find Your Voice podcast, available on all platforms. I will start uploading again. I've had a bit of a sabbatical from that. The Anxious Investor on YouTube, Instagram as well. You know, I'm trying to do a lot of content. To be honest, I think in lockdown, YouTube's kept my mind right in terms of giving me something to do. Health Excel has been difficult in terms of getting it out to products and getting it out on the marketplace and stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty much available anywhere. But I definitely recommend, like, if you look at Find Your Voice, look at the titles for the episodes, because there'll be somebody I've interviewed that will have a story very similar to yours. And if no matter how boring you feel your story is or how hard you feel your life is, what I try and get from that episode is to let you know there's an element of hope and there is a way out. So if you're going through something now, which many of us are struggling with, somebody is going through the same stuff as you and they've come out the other side. So that's not to say your circumstance is going to be exactly the same, but it should hopefully give you a bit of hope and inspiration. So when I hear some of these stories, the things I was moaning about yesterday, they're so invalid, because I'm thinking there's so much more potential we have as humans, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Often we're staying away from it, but like yourself, I mean, I didn't know that about you, but the resilience you will have compared to just somebody else who's lived in a home for the whole life, it's different. It's a different level of resilience.
Yeah, 100%.
That's what I love.
And this is why it's so important that we get the message out there. And these people, they have to reach out, because there's so much that you can do. I mean, I look at you as a mentor, such a cliche word, but in such a condensed amount of time, look at what you've done. You've created such a platform for people to come and speak, and social media and the podcast is such a great advocate for that. I mean, look at yourself, what you've done in the short space of time, and people need to reach out to yourself. If it's not me, please reach out to Aaron, because very approachable. And he's been there, he's done it, he's been down to the bottom, and look where he is now. And doesn't have to be myself. Just message. You don't have to come on a podcast or on YouTube. And that's what I'd suggest, is just message or reach out. And if there's anything you want to add on to that, Aaron, and please.
You're going to get me emotional at the end of the podcast. But I just want to add, actually, let me add to that, because I really appreciate that, genuinely, like from the bottom of my heart, what you said there. But I promise you that yourself and anyone listening to this has that ability to do what I'm doing. Like I am, and I don't say this to try and like humble brag or anything, I'm genuinely the most normal person you'll ever meet. Like the reason I put bloopers at the end of my videos is to show you, I can't even say a coherent sentence half the time. Like a 60-second video for me takes me 5 minutes. When I do podcasts, the reason I don't always release my podcast straight away is because I'm editing the mistakes and the words that I keep messing up on. Like I could have the greatest guest and I'm the one messing that up because I'm erring and ahring. And I tried to say a quote to you earlier on, I butchered that as well. Like I'm always finding faults in myself, which I suppose we all kind of do on a higher scale, but there is nothing other than knowing where I want to go. So I know that Find Your Voice, I think I found it a niche there. I know that sharing people's stories is important for me to get a new perspective, but important for the listener as well. So all I do is, it's quite an easy job. And I know my gifts are listening. I think I'm a much better listener than I am a speaker. So there's somebody listening to this who may have the same. Go and do podcasting, go and do YouTube, go and do counseling, whatever you think will fill your heart. There might be somebody a better speaker than myself. Go and do a podcast. Like, there's so many things that you can do out there. I never want to be put on a pedestal. This is one thing I hate with gurus and stuff, is that they're just a normal person who's excelled or potentially excelled in an area of life that you may not have yet tapped into. But who's to say you can't go and do that?
Aaron, it's been absolutely fantastic. I don't want to take any more of your time. I'm definitely going to try and get you on it again in a couple of months whenever you're next free. But guys, thank you very much for listening. And Aaron, thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.